And as you see the curtains back here that we don't normally have are, of course, covering the set for Steel Magnolias. Be sure to spread the word that that begins this coming weekend. By the way, I know Bill Jan, who heads up our parking lot helpers, would appreciate any help he can get. Any of you, if you want to help serve in some way in the parking lot, concessions, tickets, if you'll talk to people, that you could talk to them, I'm sure, at the connection corner in the social hall after the service. They'll hook you up with the right people. About 17 years ago, a number of us from Asbury started attending a week-long music and arts event at Lake Junaluska, North Carolina. Lake Junaluska is a beautiful Methodist conference center nestled in the Smoky Mountains. It's just gorgeous. It's so therapeutic going there. The first year we attended this event, the Music and Arts Week, Sherry and I didn't realize how popular an event it was. So when we went to rent a cabin for the two of us and our four children, we were surprised to discover that all of the houses and cabins had been booked. We'd have to find a place off campus. And we finally did. We finally found a house about 20 minutes from Junaluska. Many of the houses and cottages in that part of North Carolina are given names. For instance, one is named the Robin's Nest. Another, the Cozy Cottage. The Beehive. The Butterfly House. In fact, I think some of you have stayed in the Butterfly House before. The name of the house that we got was called Absolutely Amazing. And so we drive to North Carolina and pick up the key for the house at a rental place, and the office manager points in the direction of this huge mountain and says, "It's on top of that there mountain." And so we start driving up the mountain, and at first it's like regular mountain roads and curves, but as we got higher and higher, it started getting more and more undeveloped. And we only saw a few houses along the way, and the more we kept going up, there were less and less houses until there were none. The road started becoming very primitive, so primitive that we started seeing mirrors that someone had embedded into the bark of trees. Now, why would you see mirrors embedded into the bark of trees? Because you could not see what was coming around the corners of these narrow paths. Well, by now, we're very high on the mountain, and all of a sudden, the car started pointing up, straight up. You know when you're on a roller coaster, and it's about to climb that last big peak for the last big plunge, and the cart you're in turns straight up towards the heavens, putting all of the force of gravity on your back? That's what we experienced in the car. We started moving up and up and up, and the kids started screaming. And I started screaming inside. And I didn't think it was the right time to let them know that I wasn't a very good mountain driver. And it was then that I realized why they called this house Absolutely Amazing. Because it's absolutely amazing if you survive the ride to the house. Well, we did. We finally got there, and the house was great. And the view from the house and from the top of that mountain was simply absolutely amazing. And so the next morning, we went back down the mountain to the conference at Junaluska. Sherry and the kids were all participating in workshops and dance and choral music and stuff. And I, on the other hand, was just there to take it easy and to enjoy the scenery. Chris Wilburn was there. He had brought his daughter, Jenny, and I bumped into Chris, who was a member of Asbury. And he had some free time like me. And so he and I decided that we would make ourselves useful and made sandwiches for all the Asburyans who were in the workshops for their lunch. And so I said, "Hey, Chris, why don't we go back to my place to make the sandwiches? Come on and I'll take you there." And I couldn't wait because I wanted to surprise him and I wanted to see him let out a big shriek or two on the way. And he did. When we made it to the house, we went to the kitchen and started making sandwiches. While everyone from Asbury was in workshops down in the valley at Junaluska, all of a sudden we hear, Chris and I look at each other. We're stunned. It sounded as though someone had knocked on the door, but no one we knew would be up there. And we decided that we just must have heard something else, a tree falling or something like that. But then it happened again. There was someone at the door. Who in the world could it be? Who would climb all the way to the top of this mountain? Who would ride on those narrow, treacherous paths with mirrors embedded into the trees? Who would point their car skyward as if they were on the screen machine? Chris left the kitchen and went to the front door to see who it was. I don't know why I didn't follow him. I wasn't really in the mood to see people, and I stayed in the kitchen. I should have followed him. It could have been dangerous, Chris opening the door to strangers alone on top of this mountain. I had seen Deliverance. They didn't get that. You got to watch Deliverance. It's worth it. That's where that came from. I stayed frozen in the kitchen. Chris opened the door, and someone apparently said something to him because he responded, "Oh, hi." And then he yells back to me, "Hey, Billy, it's the Jehovah Witnesses." I continued to hide in the kitchen. You talk about commitment. Those people climbed Mount Everest just to come knock on our door. But now I knew I didn't want to go to the door. The last thing I wanted to do on my vacation was get into a theological debate with Jehovah Witnesses, and the last thing I wanted to do was deal with people, so I continued to hide in the kitchen. Now, you had to know Chris Wilbur to really appreciate this story. Chris was an extreme extrovert. He loved people, and he had an incredible sense of humor and openness about him, and he liked to tease people. You know what he said next to them? He said, "How did you find us? We came all the way to get up here to get away from you people." We came all the way up here to get away from you people. Fortunately, one of the Jehovah Witnesses also had a good sense of humor and responded in a deep baritone voice, "You can run, but you can't hide." Chris laughed. The Jehovah Witnesses laughed. I stayed in the kitchen. Our lectionary text for today is a story that takes place on a mountain. For those of you who keep up with the lectionary and the Christian calendar, you know that today is what is called the swing Sunday between the seasons of Epiphany and Lent. It's the day those who follow Jesus look down at our maps and calendars and go, "Uh-oh, it's time to turn away from the twinkling stars of Christmas and Epiphany and look toward the deep wilderness of Lent." And as gloomy as that may sound, is really good news, because most of us are so distracted by our gadgets, so busy with our work, so addicted to our pleasures, and so resistant to looking into the depths of our souls, that a nice long spell in the wilderness is just what the doctor ordered. It's just what we need. This swing Sunday is called Transfiguration Sunday, because the traditional story for the day is that very strange one when Jesus starts lighting up like Rudolph. He takes Peter, James, and John up a mountain, and we know that whenever someone goes up a mountain in the Bible, something special is about to happen. And that something special is usually transformation. Someone usually goes through some type of change, a transformation. Well, it sure happens in this story, because all of a sudden Jesus starts glowing. And then Moses and Elijah suddenly appear out of nowhere. Moses and Elijah, two people who had not walked the earth for hundreds of years. And I'm not sure how the disciples knew who they were. They had never met Elijah and Moses, and they probably weren't wearing name tags, and Kodak had not been invented. But hey, people are glowing, so you just got to go with the story, all right? And then Peter, who is all excited about this incredible experience, says, "Jesus, this is awesome. Hey, let me make three dwelling places for you so you can stay there. So we can all stay here. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." Now, the only thing missing from this story is a talking cloud. And so a cloud comes and overshadows them and says, "This is my son, my beloved. Listen to him." The disciples fall to the ground in fear. Jesus comforts them. And when the disciples look up, Moses and Elijah are gone. And then Jesus and the disciples make their way back down the mountain and continue their ministry. Now, one of the traditional ways of interpreting this story, this text, is that Moses represents the law, right? We all know that. Moses represents the law. Elijah represents the prophets. And so Jesus is the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. That makes sense. This passage is revealing the true identity, the true nature of Christ. Sometimes when I preach this text, I focus on Peter's activity, kind of his eagerness and his anxiousness to do something, and then God's cloud voice tells him to be still, to be quiet and to listen. Kind of reminds me of that story about Martha and Mary. When Jesus comes over to visit, Martha is running around doing everything in the house, cleaning up, while Mary is sitting there listening to Jesus. And Martha is upset with her and asks Jesus to tell Mary to get up and to help her. But Jesus says to Martha, "Mary has chosen wisely by being present with me. By being still and listening. Be still and know that I am God." We need to do that, and we will be doing that a whole lot during the season of Lent and at these Taze services. They are incredible. I encourage you to attend them. They will make a difference in your life and especially in your spiritual journey. We so badly need times of quiet, stillness, contemplative prayer. And by the way, do you remember the story about someone hearing God in the silence? You know, the storms came and God could not be found, but finally it gets quiet and the person hears God in a still, small voice in the silence. Do you remember who that was? Elijah. The same Elijah who made an appearance in this story. Interesting, eh? And so besides this story revealing that Jesus is the fulfillment of the law and the prophets, the story reminds us of the importance of being still and listening. Experience God, experiencing God in the silence. Something else to think about and to ponder about this story. It will not be long now when Jesus will be entering Jerusalem. He is now at the point where he will be taking his ministry to another level. He is getting closer and closer to confronting those who are in power, and he knows that the outcome will probably be his death. And he must have been needing something to give him strength, some courage, some inspiration, something to keep him going, to keep him committed to his calling. And perhaps he found these things in this experience with Moses and Elijah. He had heard about them his entire life, ever since he was a young child. He knew of their brave deeds and their acts of courage. They had been heroes for him. They had not been perfect people. Both Moses and Elijah had their issues, made their mistakes, but they also did remarkable things because they allowed God to use them in difficult and in dangerous situations. And Jesus could identify with them. Here he was, tapping into their spirit, their wisdom, their courage, so he could do what God was calling him to do. And again, Jesus had not known these two people. They had lived long before he walked this earth. And I got to thinking about you and me. If you could call on two people, if you could have a special gathering with two people who now live in eternity to inspire you and to offer you courage and wisdom, to keep you committed to your calling during challenging times, who would it be? Lincoln? Gandhi? Dr. King? Mother Teresa? How about the Apostle Paul? Or Esther? Or Mary Magdalene? These people no longer walk the earth, but they are not dead. They are alive. They're more alive now than when they walk the earth. And now they do not have physical limitations. And I believe they want to help us. Many of you know that one of my favorite quotes was made by that incredible scientist and theologian, Teilhard de Chardin. We are not human beings searching for a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Our essence is spirit. Our essence is eternal. When Jesus was on the cross, what did he say? Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. That is, I'm giving you the part of me that will live on. My true self. My eternal self. So when I'm talking about connecting with those who have died and made their transition, I'm not just talking about remembering them and their good deeds. Wasn't it incredible how they did that? As if they are a thing from the past. They are not just of the past. They are of the present. I'm talking about understanding that these people are alive and want to help you, want to inspire you, and are praying for you. Your loved ones who have passed on. This is not just wishful thinking. It's not just pie in the sky. They are with you. In the 12th chapter of the Epistle of Hebrews, the author says, we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. So let's run with perseverance the race marked out for us. We know that there are radio waves, even though we cannot see them, touch them or feel them, and like radio waves, a spiritual wavelength also exists. These clouds of witnesses are there wanting to help us live courageous and fulfilling lives. In my book, I mentioned that 6 years ago, I was driving to a bank one day, and that particular day, something was really bothering me, a problem that was really weighing me down, something I couldn't stop worrying about. And as I pulled up to the ATM machine, the name Emilio Rossi just popped into my consciousness. I had not thought about or seen Emilio Rossi in 20 years since I moved from New York City. I actually may have heard about her death in 1994. She died, listen to this, she died at the age of 105. Amelia was a member of my church in New York. She was almost 5 feet tall and was a bundle, small bundle of positive energy. She was a person of great faith and she had a wonderful sense of humor. I didn't see her often, but when I did, she would flirt with me in a cute kind of way and I would flirt back. I always admired this little woman who could keep being so positive at such a great age and living in wild Manhattan. But I had not thought of Amelia in so long. And if you had asked me, what was the name of that cute little lady at Marble who lived to be over 100, I probably couldn't have told you. Those of you who know me know that I struggle, really struggle with remembering names. And I certainly couldn't have told you Amelia's last name. If I was lucky, I might have come up with her first name, but not her last. I always just called her Amelia. But as clear as a bell, Emilio Rossi popped into my consciousness. And my first thought was, what was that about? How did that happen? Why did it happen? And then I reflected on Emilio's life and her positive spirit. I remembered how much I enjoyed seeing her and being in her presence, how inspired I was by her courage. And my problem just seemed to dissolve away. I was so taken by this little experience, I decided to write my former boss, Arthur Caliandro, who was the senior minister of Marble Collegiate Church. Arthur had developed a really close relationship with Amelia. He called her almost every single day to check on her. And I thought he might be interested in knowing about this strange experience. And after mailing him the letter, I wondered if I'd get a letter back about it. I didn't. I got a phone call 4 days after I mailed the letter. He said, tell me about Amelia. I want to know. And I told him what had happened. And he said, thanks for sharing this with me, Billy. It means more to me than you know. Well, a couple of years ago, I was going through some spiritual magazines, and I came upon an article written by Arthur and Frank Ramsey, who helped edit my book. I'm sorry, I blew it. I had forgotten about this piece, and this would have been incredible to have added to that chapter at the very end about Arthur and Amelia. And those who have read that chapter, please mentally put these words now on the end of that story. Arthur was writing, his subject was about angels. And this is what he wrote. I began to pay serious attention to the spiritual realm 13 years ago. I was having lunch with a friend to celebrate her 90th birthday. Unexpectedly, she said, very seriously, Arthur, I have an angel. And she pointed to her shoulder. There was something about the way she said this that made it very real. She told me that when she was a little girl of 11, she had become aware that somebody was with her. That somebody, she said, has been with me all my life. This remarkable woman, Arthur writes, is now 103. He's writing about Amelia. This remarkable woman is now 103. She's had at least 3 severe heart attacks. She's broken a hip. She's been mugged. She has had all manner of trouble. But every time she comes back, she comes back strong and hopeful. And I always wonder, how does she do it? Her faith is a part of it. And she's been blessed with good genes. But I wonder whether a lot of it isn't due to her connection with her angel. At that 90th birthday luncheon 13 years ago, she said something that has become very special to me. She said, "Arthur, when I die, I'm going to give you my angel." Now we know why Arthur called me and wanted to know about my experience with Amelia. So I kept making sandwiches in the kitchen as Chris Wilburn kept talking and talking and talking to the Jehovah Witnesses and talking and talking. 30 minutes later, Chris came back into the kitchen and he was glowing. He had a big smile on his face. They were really interesting people, he said. I enjoyed talking to them. I was amazed. I found Chris's way with people absolutely amazing. Maybe one reason Chris was so good with people and wanted to be with people is because he was isolated from them for so long. When the cases of polio surged in our country in the early 1950s, Chris was one of its victims, just missing the timing of that wonderful salt vaccine that came out in 1955. That isolation for him for so long in an iron lung, that isolation for him so long in a bed, that isolation for him so long in his room, created a human being that understood the sacred gift of fellowship and being with others. Those challenges and many others, and among them having no use of one of his arms because of polio, helped him develop a great perspective of life and a keen sense of humor. The heart attack that took his life 9 years ago shocked and saddened us all. But Chris is not dead. In fact, he helps me daily now to talk to strangers, to reach out to others, to get out of the kitchen. In her book, Walking on Water, the great writer and thinker Madeline Lingle writes, "Here we are on the border of Christian mystery. We are not meant to be separated from those who have gone before us. And so go gather. Gather with the cloud of witnesses. Gather with those who will inspire you, who are praying for you, who will help you run with perseverance the race marked out for you." Amen and amen.